So I want to get a couple cases in here and start to get into the clinical flavor of how this plays out, including how people tolerate therapy. Mike, you had this 51-year-old lady. Can you tell us briefly about her?
Yeah, sure. 51-year-old woman, essentially past medical history is unremarkable, and presented with a high-grade endometrial cancer. CT scan was negative for metastatic disease, underwent what I consider to be a very, very good standard surgical staging procedure, had a positive pelvic and periaortic lymph nodes, received adjuvant therapy with carboplatin paclitaxel 6 cycles, and did get whole pelvic radiation, which is something I'm not a big fan on, but this patient was, I shared the care on this patient. Post-treatment scan NED, 12-month follow-up scan showed intra-abdominal recurrence. I think we do have the scan. And she was, at that point, treated with anti-PD-1 single-agent Pembro, actually.
And can you, we'll show her scans before and after treatment. Was she symptomatic at the time you started treatment, Mike?
Not really. I mean, it was one of those issues. She didn't volunteer it. This was a routine scan. And then, of course, in retrospect, saying, yeah, I didn't really feel, I felt a little bloating. I didn't feel well, but not dramatically symptomatic. And you can see here, there's upper abdominal disease around the liver and also some disease on the other side. So it's really intra-abdominal disease.
So what happened when you treated her?
Well, she had it
clinically.
Yeah. So
any autoimmune problems, any toxicity at all?
She did exceedingly well, had no problem. I think we had the scan, which showed that she was responding very nicely. Shrinkage of both sites. And now she's beyond that. That's a 12-month scan, I believe. She's now beyond that. And she still has sort of, you see there, there's some abnormalities around the liver and on the other side. And of course, this is what you get into with IO a lot, which is, what is that? We're pretty far out. Is that residual tumor that's in a tug of war with the T cells, or is this just some inflammation and scar tissue? We don't know, but she's still on Pembro. And the problem I've run into with IOs in particular is patients who do well when you're out after 2 years or 3 years, convincing them to stop, because that's where all the trials are, is next to impossible, actually, unless they're having toxicity, which they usually don't.
The number one question that docs in practice have, which is a great question. Can you imagine 5 years ago we'd be talking about this, when to stop therapy? But just, you know, Dave, just have you had patients where you stopped treatment, and at what point did you stop? We'll see some data from the survey, but as long as it was brought up, I'm just kind of curious.
So I've had patients on trial I had to stop, and I had no option. You know, we really have to lean on our melanoma and lung cancer colleagues to give us some direction. I just had this discussion with my fellow today with regards to the lack of data at this 2 year and what we should do. I think we all probably have patients who have been cured of recurrent cancer in our practice because of immune therapy. And so when in my practice, if they have a complete response and it's been sustained, I have started to stop therapy outside of the clinical trial. But if they have persistent disease, if they have that persistent groin or periaortic lymph node, I will continue them as long as they're not having toxicity.
So this next case really gets into, I think, maybe the most interesting thing going on right now in this whole field, as at least from my point of view. Using checkpoint inhibitors in MS stable disease, which a couple years ago, I never imagined we'd be where we are today. And I think it's really exemplified by this 41-year-old woman, Mike. What happened there?
Yeah. So again, in otherwise good health, presented as a high-grade endometrial cancer, CT scan, again, negative for metastatic disease, proceeds to surgery, solid surgery, stage 3C1, disease with a positive pelvic lymph node, gets adjuvant chemo, all of this fairly standard, carboplatin paclitaxel 6 cycles, pretty much flies through that post-treatment scan. And I'm a med onc, so I tend to scan a lot, but at that point she's NED. Unfortunately, 3 months follow-up, she is symptomatic with pain and some nausea, which is sort of interesting because the scan was, I was really afraid what the scan would show, which didn't show as much disease. So she underwent a CT scan, which showed recurrent disease. And that's shown here. She's got, you know, fairly big mass down here. And it's a suggestion, which I don't think the scan reflects well, but a suggestion that she also had some carcinomatosis at this time. Now, normally, you know, this discussion would have been very different a couple of years ago. We did perform a biopsy because there was some debate about, you know, whether this was recurrent disease. She, AIC was ER negative. She had NGS on that sample and had a couple of findings, none of which struck our fancy. She was not microsatellite unstable. She was stable. And again, would have been a different conversation 4 or 5 years ago. She would have been considered platinum resistant, although we don't, generally don't use that. And we would have been searching for things like, unfortunately, doxorubicin and other horrible things. We're putting her on trial, but here she started on lenvatinib and pembro. Developed hypertension relatively rapidly, but it was relatively well controlled by two antihypertensives. She did have diarrhea, grade 2. That was actually harder to control from a symptomatic standpoint, so she was dose reduced to 14 milligrams. I will point out she started at 20, and then she was rescanned after 4 months.
And also, Mike, you were telling me about something that you would prescribe 18 milligrams so you can get down to 14. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, we always have really fascinating discussions in ad boards. A lot of us have complained or slash commented about, first of all, the dose. If you look at the trials that led to the approval, it was 20 milligrams. 20 milligrams has a fair amount of side effects. And the formulation is such that you go from 20 to 18 to 14. The average dose on some of the trials, the final average dose, was 14. So some of my colleagues, some of whom are probably right on this discussion, start out at either 14 or 18. I'm a purist, so I start out at 20. And there's still a lot of debate about that. You know,
so you were saying something about to get the pills, the milligrams of the pills. It's easier to dose reduce if you start with 18, or maybe somebody else.
Yeah, no, you need a PhD to understand the pills.
What about this scan? Do you want anything you want to say about that? Looks like she had a great response.
She's essentially in complete remission.
Yes,
and again, this is an evolving story. Again, a lot of us sit on these ad boards. The issue is, if you do start at 14 or you end up down that dose, do those patients not get the benefit compared to the patients at the higher dose? I think that's an unsettled issue right now. There's still a lot of work going on as to what the right dose is and how patients benefit.
Well, one thing that is clear is that patients are benefiting. It sounds like this woman really benefited. Was she having tumor-related symptoms when she started therapy, and what actually happened? Any autoimmune problems? Yeah. And beyond the other than the, what you were talking about in terms of lenvatinib, anything else?
So I think when I first saw her and I heard about her symptoms, I assumed that she was going to have ascites and a lot of tumor. I was surprised. It was less than I expected. But nevertheless, I think her symptoms came from the tumor. Her regimen is almost all, in my view, lenvatinib toxicity. Her hypertension or diarrhea from lenvatinib. The trick on diarrhea, though, because it's a combination, is this lenvatinib diarrhea or is it colitis from pembro? And so a lot of us have struggled with this. My sort of division point on that is, first of all, if you dose reduce or you hold the drug, you hold lenvatinib and it doesn't go away, you've got to examine them for colitis. And two, if there's any blood at all, then they need a scope.
Interesting. So, and now everything's getting even more complicated evaluating autoimmune problems with COVID and, you know, in terms of pneumonitis, but we'll get into that later. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious, Dave, when you look, this patient had really remarkable response and really, all things considered, I would say tolerating it fairly well. Would you say this is kind of typical of what you see clinically? Do most patients respond and benefit, or are they, the outliers?
No, I mean, I think we're seeing it at, you know, 35 to 40% response rate with most patients benefiting. You really look at Macker's report and the update here recently, almost all the patients clinically benefit. The 40, 37% response rate is those who have confirmed partial response. So when we really look at this, most patients or almost all patients are benefiting. So even a stable disease, you're seeing shrinkage and you're seeing disease control. So I think the rule is that people respond, but it can be toxic. You know, Mike doesn't think I'm trainable and he's tried over the years, but I'm glad to see that he followed my direction finally with the 18 milligrams. Coming back to the pills. So the pills, if you get the 20, are just two 10 milligram pills.
Or maybe you order, told me it then.
If you order 18, you get a 10 and two fours. So most patients, 80% of patients will require a dose reduction. So it's much easier to go from 18 to 14. And the first dose reduction on the trials was actually 14 milligrams, though some of us will order 18 because of that reason. So when we look at this, it's a really nice way to do it. And I'm not sure. We've a lot of us have looked very closely at this data, some of it published, some of it unpublished. But there could be something with regards to a loading dose and trying to keep that dose as high as you can for as long as you can. And most of the dose reductions are going to be in the second cycle. So getting them through that first cycle is usually possible, and the majority will be in the second, third cycle.
So I'm really fascinated by the whole issue of the tolerability, managing it with lenvatinib, pembrolizumab. But we'll talk more a little bit about it later. I think I talked to Mike about it for about a half an hour. And I apologize if it was you, Dave, who brought it up, but I kind of feel like a traffic cop in the circles. People are going around me. I don't even know what people are saying anymore. But anyhow, it's all good. That's the good part of it.